This program, brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com, is suitable for mature audiences only and may contain explicit sexual information.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Taste of Sex, Guest Speaker Interviews. This is Beth Crittenden, your host for the show, coming to you from One Taste Urban Retreat Center in San Francisco. Thanks for Personal Life Media for hosting A Taste of Sex, Guest Speaker Interviews. On today's show, we have Lee Harrington, who's visiting us from all around the place.
It's true.
Lee is a bondage model and artist. She's a photographer. She's a pro-dom, a sexual and spiritual educator, a fetishist, a sadomasochist, and a shaman. Welcome, Lee, to the show.
Glad to be here.
So on today's show, we'll be talking about Lee's views on the scene, how there's not a scene, all the politics behind it, and her journey into this part of society that is not often talked about, but certainly enjoyed by those who are in it. We'll also talk about her personal obsession with passion and how she gets into her teaching and how you can find as much passion behind accounting as you can behind whipping.
That's true.
And also we'll end up the show with Lee's views on spirituality and sexuality, which is important to us here at One Taste as well. And before we get started, I want to let the listeners know that here at One Taste, we have a practice called orgasmic meditation. And it's a practice of feeling every stroke, feeling the orgasm that's shared between two people. And we actually do this by studying a wide variety of disciplines and practices, and to us, everything is divine. Join us today on A Taste of Sex Guest Interviews as Lee Harrington breaks down some of the politics of the BDSM scene. She tells us how you can be passionate about absolutely anything, and also we'll hear about what it takes to make a great BDSM scene, in addition to thousands of little ways to communicate way beyond verbal. Tell us about how you got into professional sexuality.
Well, the path is kind of, I've been joking that I take the long way around, as the Dixie Chicks have been recently coining it, that I started out being a crazy, exploring kid. I remember being 6 or 7 years old and trying everything under the sun. I remember that I used to tie kids up in the backyard. I remember I read my parents' entire porn collection because I was a latchkey kid who was one of those crazy IQ 150, read everything under the sun. I'd read the entirety of the Encyclopedia Britannica. So, of course, the porn collection was next. And the thing that struck me in all of these different things that I was reading about or seeing or playing around in my own imagination was the idea that was twofold, actually. One is that the biggest thing that I got hooked into as a kid was other people doing amazing things around me. If I had a group of friends who were really about, you know, going, oh, let's go practice for this math competition, I end up being, you know, a placer in national math competitions because I had a really great group of people feeding that passion around me. Not that I'm a follower per se, but that I like grabbing onto what other people are doing and running with it. So that was one part of it, was the idea that I was having people doing all these amazing different things around me. But also, I remember finding a story when I was a little kid that said, that was in a Penthouse Forum. That was the magazine. And the story was about a woman on her 21st birthday and how she got kidnapped by her friends, you know, and lovingly kidnapped. You know, they said, oh, put on this blindfold, put these handcuffs behind your back. And she was taken to a friend's house where she was tied down and covered in pudding and food was eaten off her. And there's all this sex that happened. And at the very end of the story, it said, and I had such a great time and all my friends were around me. And thank you so much for letting me share this story with you. And then I sat there and decided to just, I compared it to a lot of the other stories I was hearing out there about sexuality, where people were talking about the guilt of one night stands and the anguish about whether they were pleasuring their wife or not. And this was the only story, this kinky story, kinky with quotes around it for people who can't see my hand motions at home. This kinky story was the only thing that I was seeing out there in pornographic images that didn't have guilt associated with it. So I remember making a vow to myself at the age of 7 or 8 that when I grew up, I wanted friends like that around me. I wanted a group of friends who would unabashedly and joyfully and passionately share their life with me as, you know, friends talking about the news and talking about sports, but also as a sexual creature. And that's how I ended up getting involved with the scene many years later, was that I'd already made this vow to myself as a child that I wanted friends around me who were open and honest with their spirituality and their sexuality and their lives as a whole, not just sharing a moment of blissful passion and then each going in the opposite direction with all this guilt and unanswered questions holding on. In 2000, I started doing adult film movies under the name Bridget Harrington, and it was through the professional work there that as an adult film actor that I would show up on sets and people would say, oh, can you do some bondage as well? So I started doing bondage professionally because I'd been doing it in my personal life in the quote scene for many years. And so in 2000, I started doing stuff in movies. And in 2003, I started teaching some of these different skills that I've picked up along the way, everywhere from communication and relationships to rope bondage to how to bring your fantasy life back, all the way through the academic types of presentations I do on gender theory and what titles give and mean to us as human beings.
What makes a good bondage teacher?
In my opinion, it depends on what you're looking to do with your bondage. There are a lot of people out there who want to follow a traditional school of teaching. For example, shibari or other spin-offs of Japanese rope bondage like hojo jutsu, which is a martial arts of rope. For people who want to follow a traditional route, I'd say find a teacher who has a traditional lineage that they can pass on to you and learn a lot and give you that insight behind. But for me, when I'm learning, my biggest thing is seeing people with confidence, seeing the instructor know their ties inside and out, and so that they're, instead of focusing on their hands and what they're doing, they're able to do that without even thinking about it, and therefore able to focus their attention on the persons, to the individuals who are learning underneath them, or side by side with them, because I also do a lot of tutorials that are what I call kasika training or one-on-one training. And in those situations, it's about me being able to divest myself of what I have involved with the bondage and letting the other person shine. I think that's a lot more important to me and how I learn. When I go to instructors and I want to learn, I want people to know what they're doing enough to be able to actually pay attention to what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you were open and explorative from a pretty early age.
Definitely.
What did it take for you to really step into your sexuality and say, I'm going to play here?
Well, that's hard to say because I think I'm one of those crazy people that's been doing that all the way along the road. I didn't have one time where I said, oh, wow, that was really fun. I want to go join the scene. It's not how it really happened in my life. At the Now we're not supposed to talk about, you know, kids having sex lives, right? But I was a kid who had a sex life, not some sort of abusive thing where people were taking advantage of me. No, I was playing with other kids my age and finding my own way around and going, okay, well, I want to try all these different activities. How do I do them? And I was making it up as I went along. So I'm actually really grateful that I was able to, and I was doing that at the age of, you know, 11, 12, 13. And so by the time I was 15, I was doing some really stupid stuff. I was reusing blades. I was, because we thought, oh, you can only get AIDS from, you know, sex stuff, not from blood, right? Ugh. I'm really glad, actually, that I'm alive, because I did some really stupid things when I was a kid. And so when I was a teenager and I found the quote scene, I found a BDSM club in Seattle, Washington that I snuck into under a fake ID. And to this day, I'm finally being allowed to teach in Seattle, even though I teach all over the globe, because there's a lot of people who remember in the scene when they found out that I was 19 and they went, but you've been going to parties here since you were, oh, that's bad. And they finally did the math and I was not welcome for quite a while because they figured that out. But I'm really glad that I did because, and I'm really glad there's resources out there for underage kinksters now, and there's books, because a lot of us are doing that stuff anyway. So that's one of the reasons I believe in education at all ages, is to encourage people to find out what they can actually learn and what they can actually do safer. There's no such thing as safe sex, right? But safer. And so for me, coming into the quote scene was about just continuing forward and on my path. I didn't have any sort of revelatory moment where I said, this is what I want to do. It was just another path towards finding that group of happy friends who'd share joy with me.
And now that you've had so much experience, you travel all over the place, you've done this for years and years and years.
It's true.
What is it about it that still turns you on? Like, what really gets your attention?
That spark. That moment when you look across, you know, whether they're an inch away or 6 feet away, and it's whether it's a lover or somebody in a classroom, but that moment of aha. That moment when they just pause and you see them close their eyes for a second and then open their eyes again, and it's full of joy and that spark of passion and that spark of you know, all the different chemicals running through their brain all at once. You could just see them light up. That's the moment that's worth it all to me still, is getting to feed off that a little bit.
Mm, thank you. You just lit me up. We're going to take a quick break now to support our sponsors here on Personal Life Media. When we return, we'll hear more about passion, and let's talk more about spirituality and sexuality.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Erotic Poetry Reading, a companion program to Life in an Orgasm-Based Community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to A Taste of Sex Guest Speaker Interviews. This is your host, Beth Crittenden, coming to you from One Taste Urban Retreat Center. And we're here today with Lee Harrington, who's visiting us to teach a workshop on sensual rope bondage for the female form, which we're really looking forward to. So we were talking a little bit before the show about your relationship with passion and your passion for passion. So let's hear about that.
Indeed. I've had websites on the internet for years and years and years, mostly as an adult film actor and I was a photographer, but then I had educational sites and all this different stuff. And a friend of mine said, well, you need to get one catch-all site, one, you know, site that everybody can go to and then be able to feed it off. And it made me sit down and think, what are the themes that run through all of my work, whether it's as an artist, whether it's as a model, whether it's as an educator? What are the things that keep coming up? And I realized that throughout my entire life, one of the themes that keeps coming up is passion. I would rather spend 6 hours stuck in a room talking with somebody about the history of quantum physics, evolution of theory, even if I know nothing about it. I'd rather spend 6 hours doing that than have an interesting conversation about what are you into? I get a lot of this in my life of people who have this perception, and it's not just my life, people that I've met all over the world, where there's this perception that we have to have this, well, one for you and now one for me, whether it's orgasms or bites of an ice cream bar or profit sharing, whatever it is. And to me, that's so banal. I would rather live in a world where people are pursuing their own individual passions fully, heartfeltly, with every core and inch of their being. And if the places that we happen to intersect with our partners, whether our partners are our husbands, wives, and girlfriends, boyfriends, you know, life mates, soulmates, or whether these are people and partners that will cross along our road professionally, I'd rather have each person and see meet people who are all fulfilled with their own personal passions. And if I get to share that joy with them, piece here, a piece there, that's more fulfilling to me than having to be glued along one road with one person the entire life journey, because all of us ebb and flow throughout our passions and throughout all the things that we do. And I'd rather share those places where it naturally intersects with people rather than forcing it down one specific road.
And so what was the last kind of high point of passion? What was the last topic that you felt that way about?
I was in San Diego earlier this week, And I had an opportunity to meet a fabulous group of bears down there who, absolutely beautiful boys, that were attending one of my other bondage classes. And one of them said, oh, if you ever have any time, darling, show up at my house. We'll hang out. We'll have a glass of red wine. It sounds absolutely perfect. And we were looking for a venue for a private suspension class for that Saturday. And he said, use my place. It's absolutely perfect. You'll love it. And we showed up, and there was this moment of just joy and passion sharing that got to come over me when I got to see this absolutely fabulous boy go into housekeeping mode and host mode, where he was running around, grabbing a bottle of wine and getting to just, he'd turn around and go, oh no, darling, 1986 Merlot, it's 21 years into having, since it was actually taken out of the vat, which means it's absolutely, and having him just go into in such detail was this moment of, wow. Even if I don't really get that part of wines, I got to get it through his eyes, and now I have a completely different understanding and appreciation of the types of art that he collects and the type of wine that he really enjoys, because he got to share that with me. So I think that was probably the last time, was a couple days ago.
I like how you're kind of redefining passion. I sometimes think of passion as like overwhelm, and you maybe even check out a little bit because there's so much sensation to it. But I'm realizing
that
when someone is in a scene, how do they, let's say they're holding the scene. I don't know a lot about it, but let's say they're top.
Okay.
And how do you use that passion, let it drive you, but still like keep the control that you need to keep to have it safe and clean?
One of the things that I see people do a lot in the BDSM scene, I'm going to rewind this a little bit and then bring it back to your question, is there's a big thing that's called formal negotiation. And formal negotiation is the style that's evolved out there in the, quote, BDSM community, which there is no one community. There's thousands of little communities that are all kind of joined together with certain themes in mind. But if you go to a play party in Boston, it's going to look different than a play party in San Francisco. It's going to look different than a play party in Australia. But there's a formal negotiation style that's evolved where it's a checklist of 4 or 5 pages of different things you can do, and everybody sits down and puts number 1 if you're not really into it, or really number 5 if you're really into it, or 5 with an exclamation point, right? What I see happen with this kind of thing is it takes away from the opportunity to have scenes, which is, you know, a scene is usually something that lasts from 30 seconds to 4 days, 5 days, where it's about a partner, a pair, you know, two people or a group of people connecting on a specific wavelength or activity. That's a scene, right? So a scene could be an over-the-knee spanking. A scene could be a suspension. A scene can be 5 days straight of intense role play. But it's engaging each other on a specific theme, topic, or activity. For me, when I see people uber negotiate everything, there's no room left for magic. There's no room left for that spark of the divine. There's no room left for the possibilities that are out there. So to me, what I would rather do is people will say to me, well, I'm really into bondage. And I'm like, oh, that's nice. I don't ask what activities people are in. I say, what is it about bondage that does it for you? And someone say, oh, I'm really into spanking. I'll be like, well, what is it about spanking? Why is that hot? What's sexy about it? And we'll take the example of bondage. If somebody says to me, oh, I'm really into the idea of struggling and helplessness, I'm like, oh, wow, that gives me a lot more information than I'm into bondage. Because somebody could also say, I'm into bondage because I like orgasm denial. Or I could be into bondage because I like the aesthetics of it and I like being made to be beautiful. Or other people, I'm into bondage because it's about humiliation and objectification and being transformed into a slut. These are all very, very different approaches. And so to me, I like keying into the thing that's going on behind people's skin, back into the brain. And so for me, it's asking that question of, why does it do it for you? Not what's the activity that gets you hot, but what about that activity, or what about this group of activities works for you? So that's kind of where I key into that a little bit.
Nice. And do people usually have a pretty good awareness of that, or is part of the teaching actually getting them there?
A lot of it's getting it there. I actually do a couples intensive that's either just one couple or up to 5 couples, but I try to keep it really small, that focuses on just that question, the why of what we do with our partners. Because a lot of people who show up to my classes just go, oh, well, I think bondage is pretty. or I think bondage is fun. And I'm like, okay, well, that's great. That's really great. I'm really glad you think it's fun. But what about it is fun? Do you enjoy being silly? Do you enjoy role playing? Do you enjoy being challenged physically and beginning to rise like a phoenix from the ashes of your own destruction? What is it for you? And most people don't know. And that's one of the things that I really like to do is engage people psychologically, not just the physical skill set.
Mm-hmm. And what's the baseline of what needs to be there for a scene to be successful?
I can't say it enough, but communication. And when I say communication, I don't mean red means stop and yellow means pause and green means go. And, oh, honey, can you do that 1/4 inch lower? Yes, that's communication, right? But communication is also a hand brushing against your thigh. It's also a look in your partner's eyes when you realize we got it here. Or it's that moment when they turn their face away and their mouth opens up just a little bit and you hear that. If that's not communication, I'm not sure what is. Right? It's when you're sitting at a party and instead of turning to somebody and saying, hey, want to play? It's scooting just a little bit closer and letting your hand brush against them. And if they turn back to you and blow you a little kiss, you've got it all negotiated out already, right? No, not the details of it. But what's important is that it's two or more people or even one person. It's about negotiating with yourself too, right? In a scene, you can have solo scenes completely as long as you're willing to engage in a topic, theme, or activity with and of yourself. But if we're talking about, say, two people, because that's one of the more common numbers that comes up there, if we're talking about two people, you need to have some way of expressing your desires, right? Whether that's hips moving up towards one another, or whether that's the, now let's do this next. Both those are communication. We need to have a way to express our desires, and then also a way to say if we've gone too far or need to back up. Not necessarily a stop, we're done, I'm walking out of here. Hopefully we're going to engage as a pair before that point, before it gets to that point. But being able to say, wow, that was really intense. I don't think I can do that anymore. But how about we go back to kissing instead? And so for me, that's one of the things that really comes up a lot is the idea of finding a way that you as a relationship can communicate.
That's great. One of our precepts that we live by is stay connected no matter what. It sounds like you play that way too.
Well, stay connected no matter what is a great idea, but there are those moments that go beyond that where both partners check out, or all partners, if you've got a whole crazy group of people, completely check out. And so what I mean by being able to come back with things that aren't quite working out is what happens when you get to that point where everybody stays present and suddenly we're all gone and we're all flying and we're all having an amazing time. And then we all come back to our bodies and go, okay, that went a little bit farther than I wanted to. Or, wow, that was really amazing. How do we get there again? And so that's, you know, staying connected is great. But sometimes what do we do in those moments where we aren't able to stay connected for whatever reason?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but I
definitely
do want to hear some about your take on the relationship between spirituality and sexuality.
Spirituality and sexuality are an interesting pair of beasts because there is no, quote, spirituality when we're talking about one true ways, right? Because people say, oh, well, there's God. And I'm like, great, what's God? Tell me. Is God an old man sitting on a mountaintop or who's orchestrating the entirety of everything we're doing? Is God the idea of goddess embraced in your lover's body, awakening up between the two of you until the great red explodes out the top of your head? Is spirituality, is God a tree? Is God you and me? And so when there's no one true way with spirituality and there's no one true way with sexuality, I think for me, it's about helping each person find the path that they're supposed to be on and seeing how it individually for each of us blends in and out. I could easily talk for hours about the history of Tantra and how the West and the East are completely different schools of thought on the matter. But I think the main element is, how do you relate to the divine? What is the divine to you? Even if you're completely agnostic or even if you're atheist, what do you believe in? And then how, whatever you believe in, how can you tie that core belief, that concept of connecting to the universe at large, how do you tie that back into the physicality or emotional connection of your sexuality? And for me, that's where the two interplay. There are 1,000 different ways to do that. But for each person, you've got to find the one that works for you.
If people want to study with you, if they want to take your classes or get your individual work, how can they contact you?
My primary website is passionandsoul.com, all one word. And you could also, I've got books out there. I've helped co-author Dark Moon Rising, Pagan BDSM and the Ordeal Path with Raven Caldera. I've also got Shibari You Can Use, which is on Japanese rope bondage and erotic macrame. And I'm currently working on two other projects for Greenery Press as we speak.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here.
So this has been A Taste of Sex, guest speaker interviews. I'm your host, Beth Crittenden. This has been with Lee Harrington, who we're so delighted visited us on her journey around the West Coast. If you'd like text and transcripts of this show, you can visit www.personallifemedia.com. You can also learn more about One Taste and the practice of orgasmic meditation at www.onetastesf.com. If you'd like to email us feedback or questions or requests, please use the email address onetaste@personallifemedia.com. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.